two items on our agenda this afternoon, and Tim Penny informed us that he's currently caught up in traffic, so he's running a little late. I think we're ready to go with our second topic, which is a review of the 55th Street Vandell Road frontage road intersection project. So give you a couple seconds to get set up, and we'll start with that.
Well, if you recall, about a year ago, I came to the council with a request to fund jointly with the county and shared cost of what we kind of considered the preliminary engineering phase of phase two of the 55th Street improvements, and we'll kind of bring you up to speed on what all these different phases mean here in a minute. And we're here today to report the findings that we've come, the conclusions we've reached through the preliminary engineering phase. We've had an open house, met with all of the affected property owners. Phase two of 55th Street involves the relocation of Vandell Road and its intersection with 55th Street easterly. So basically going from the east side of McDonald's, the west side of McDonald's to the east side of McDonald's for land reference points. So today we're going to tell you a little bit about that. Doing the presenting today will be Aaron Vosick and Emily Gross from SRF Consulting. Also here is Ken Holte from SRF and Ben Johnson from Olmsted County is here. Ben's a design engineer with Olmsted County and has been involved in working with us on this. So we've got some good news to report. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Aaron to share that good news with you.
Thanks, Richard. As Richard said, I'm Aaron Vosick with SRF Consulting. We're going to talk through a little bit of history here with the NRTS study that was completed back in 2009. Then we'll jump right into 55th Street Phase 2. We'll talk about the purpose of the study that was done, the geometric layouts that were prepared, the traffic evaluations that Emily performed. And we'll get an evaluation metric matrix, and then we'll talk about our outcomes and next steps. So just to give you a little history, this study is an outcome of the NRTS study that was done in 2009. Several of the projects have already been completed, two of which are 65th Street Interchange, which was done in 2013. And what that did is it put auxiliary lanes on 52 between 65th and 55th Street. It also put the interchange in along 52 and then realigned the West Frontage Road, which allowed the Menards to go in. In 2014, we did 55th Street Phase 1, which was widening the bridge and adding left turn lanes on 55th Street. We also, what we did that for is to help set up some traffic for the future improvements or future phases. The study we're here about today is 55th Street Phase 2, and as Richard said, that's to shift East Frontage Road over about 350 feet. Phase 3 will be to reconfigure the existing interchange using the existing bridge that's out there today. Phase 4 will redo the interchange with a new bridge, because that lifeboat bridge will end, and we'll also go to six lanes on 55th Street. And then the last part of that study found we need to widen out 65th Street west of the existing interchange that was built in 2013, all the way up to 50th Avenue. So the purpose of this study was to improve traffic operations along 55th Street. And really the key issue here is the close intersection spacing between East Frontage Road and the East Ramps on Highway 52. What we need to determine is what was the time frame of the need and what type of intersection are we going to build at Vandell Road, either a roundabout or a signalized intersection. That's what was determined as part of the NRTS study. So the first option is to do the signalized intersection. As you can see, we shift the intersection from where it is today. From here today, we're going to shift it about 350 feet this way. And that's to give ourselves more space in between these two signals, so traffic can't get stuck between these two areas. So as part of this layout, we added complete streets measures. We added bike lanes along Vandell and the East Frontage Road. We added bike lanes on both sides of the roadway and trails. We kept access to the buildings that we could, so we put in a new connection road in between the Holiday Station and McDonald's. We had a cul-de-sac off the frontage road on the north side of 55th Street, so those residents could still get there. Any questions on this concept, or I'll move on to the roundabout then?
One of the reasons that we came at this particular time to do the study a year ago is that some of the property owners that are affected, whose properties are impacted by one or the other, wanted some decision as to which one of the options was going, the city was going to and the county were going to proceed with, because some are affected by one but not the other. And so we had owners of some townhouses that wanted to put a new roof on their townhouse, And they said, well, if you're going to be acquiring me because of the improvement, I don't want to have to make that investment. One of the other option maybe didn't impact them quite the same. So that was the kind of the pressure we were getting from the public up in this area, because this concept has been out there since 2008 to 2009 when the study was approved, and people have been waiting and waiting and waiting, and they just said, you know, we need a decision. Which are you going to build, the intersection or the roundabout? So we've gone through that analysis, and that's why we're here.
Mr. Hickey?
Just a quick question while we're on this slide. So that frontage road that goes in front of McDonald's, will that go away then, or is that still...
Yes, we take this out. We show this as hatch. So this would go to green space then after our project.
So this one, what buildings go out? You got Wendy's, Fazoli's, the fast food.
The Progressive Auto Insurance. I'll get to a slide later, too. These tunnels would go away. This one here. This one because we lose the access. This one as well. Of course, Wendy's. We keep the Sterling State Bank. It's just access will have to be reconfigured there. Mm-hmm.
So there's businesses down here. You got a red hook there? Is that
that's our driveway.
That is there, or is that blocked off?
This would be a new driveway we built as part of the project here. This connection.
So the red means, so there's other red.
It's driveways, lines. Yes. These are median islands here.
Okay.
And this is the driveway.
Okay.
I'll move on to the next option. We can come back to these if you desire. So this is the roundabout option then. Again, very similar in terms of bike lanes, ped and walks on each side of the road. This one we can do some different things because with the roundabout we can go with a lower design speed. So we can do some different curvature with the roadway. That allows us to avoid the Wendy's. It also makes us reconstruct a little bit more 55th Street on the parallel roadway. As you can see, this cul-de-sac here, we bring be an alley essentially through this area. Basically from here north, the two options are the same. And from here south, this is where the big change is because we can put this tighter radius curves in there for a different design speed. And as they come in here, they're going to have to yield no matter what. Whereas a signal, they can go through at a higher speed. Any questions on this concept?
Mr. Hickey?
Yes, now you talked about a future, in the future, 55th Street would be six lanes?
Correct.
How do you get six lanes through a roundabout?
At that time, you'd have to reconstruct the roundabout.
And your study identified primarily the six lanes would be west of 52.
Right.
Okay.
From the interchange going westerly, probably over to, I think, Members Parkway.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
I'm going to turn over to Allie to talk through some of the traffic operation.
So for this study, we collected AM and PM peak hour counts here in April. We did it at the west frontage road, the west ramps, the east ramps, as well as the east frontage road. We compared those volumes back to the 2006 volumes collected for the NRTS study. And what we found is, since 2006, traffic volumes have decreased along 55th Street. We listed below here a number of reasons why volumes have decreased. One of the main ones is the opening of the 65th Street interchange, and that's brought a lot of traffic off of 55th Street to the north interchange. There's also been some land use changes such as Mart Menards relocating and some other local transportation improvements. We use the Rochester travel demand model to develop year 2040 peak hour volumes. The travel demand model takes into account land use projections as well as transportation improvements that are planned in the area. So our year 2040 represents, to our best knowledge, what we believe traffic is going to be like on this corridor. We also compared that back to the year 2030 traffic forecasts that were developed for the NRTS study, and we found that those volumes are similar, but if anything, they're less than what the NRTS study was projecting for 2030. So we use those volumes to run traffic operations analysis. We use these to compare the signal intersection with the roundabout intersection. What we found is that the signalized intersection provides better operations, more reserve capacity, and a lower travel time through the corridor. In the roundabout, we also looked at it in terms of safety and the number of conflict points, how pedestrians would move through the intersection for either the signal or the roundabout, and also corridor continuity or safety. The roundabout does provide some benefit compared to the signal because all vehicles entering the roundabout are making right turns versus the signal, you have more opportunity for different types of crashes. For pedestrian and bike accommodations, we found that they're relatively similar. For the signal, we'll make sure that the walk time is adequate for pedestrians to get across the crossing distance. And then the roundabout is a little different because the pedestrian always has the right of way. And then the corridor continuity, what we're seeing is that with the signal there, it provides better progression. So the roundabout vehicles are kind of, they're being seeded into the network at random times, whereas if you have a signal there, you can coordinate the two signals and allow traffic to move through at a lower time. So that's where you're seeing improvements for travel time. So we're seeing with the signal there, you have a lower travel time in the eastbound and westbound direction through the corridor. As far as operations, we're seeing overall the signal and roundabout have similar, but the roundabout does experience significant delay in the northbound direction. Vehicles are going to queue back past the Wendy's area where Wendy's is today, and they'll have a hard time getting on to 55th Street and experience a few minutes of delay. So based on those, our project needs, we found from a traffic operations perspective that the signal is the better alternative.
As you can see, both options met our project needs. There were no red boxes there. It was a matter then of evaluating which one was the better of the two. And as you can see, the signalized intersection in these six categories turned out to be the better of the two options.
Anyone has any questions too about any of the criteria or how we evaluated the two alternatives?
What about cost?
That's good.
Get to that.
Okay.
So those were we identified the preferred alternative based on the needs, and then we looked at the outcomes. So from an environmental perspective, the signalized intersection has less wetland impacts, has less change in impervious area, so it's actually a decrease in impervious area, which then gets us away from putting additional ponding in and other features like that. The constructability, so when we're going out there to build this project, the signalized intersection is much easier to build. Then we get into the right of way, and obviously with having to take Wendy's and a couple more parcels, that's where the roundabout did win out. So it had less property takes than the signalized intersection. And that has then reflected in the cost. From an engineering and construction cost, the two are about the same. From a right-of-way perspective, the roundabout did have significant savings of a difference of $2 to $2.8 million for the roundabout and $3.7 to $5.3 million for the signalized intersection.
Wow.
But again, based on the needs of the project, the signalized intersection was selected at a cost of $9.6 to $12.2 million versus $8.2 to $10.1 million. Okay. So just to point out again those right-of-way impacts, so we have the Frisoli's as a total take, the Progressive Insurance is a total take, the townhouse right here is a total take. We also buy out these homes because we can't get access the way they have them today. These could be reutilized for some other purpose. Again, and Wendy's could also be, would need to be purchased with this and some parking lot area out of the strip mall. I don't know, Richard, if you want to touch base on where Wendy's had brought up the issue, maybe.
Yeah, so most of the businesses were at the informational meeting that we held, and for example, Wendy's representatives were already talking to the Napa representatives about the possibility of relocating their store, staying in that same location, if you will, but just moving the store, but rebuilding the store more where this area, because this right away will be either sold or vacated. And so there would be an opportunity for them to stay in the general area and build a new store. So those discussions are already beginning, and that, again, was part of the impetus behind this, is so businesses and property owners can start planning their future and looking at the alternatives that would best fit them.
I think we had a question, Mr. Bilderbeck.
Yeah, I do. The slide before, when you were talking about the cost comparisons of the roundabout versus the signal, is that taken in the maintenance cost of the signal as well?
We didn't get into long-term maintenance costs of comparing the two options.
It's just the build.
It's just the build.
All right, thank you.
So these are the outcomes of the projects. The signalized intersection is the preferred alternative because it best meets the project's purpose and need. It minimizes the environmental impacts that came from the adjacent wetlands, and it has more reserve capacity than the roundabout. It means if more traffic comes this area, it can handle it. We can do some things to keep it running where the roundabout we're stuck with. The improvement isn't needed until 2025 to 2030, so that's the good news. This project, we had originally anticipated it happening earlier, 2017, 2018, based on the traffic volumes and the shifts that Emily and Owen found, we could shift the project back significantly. We did hold an open house in May. Most of the property owners that were impacted did attend. As Richard said, the biggest thing, the concern they had was, when is this going to happen? When's the project going to be built?
So, for example, the Solich people, they want to stay there. They do not want to vacate that location. But under either option, they have to leave. But if they can stay there for another 8 to 10 years, they're really happy about that. Because initially, this project was scheduled for 2016's construction. Kept moving out to 17 and 18. Now we're looking at maybe 2025 to begin.
Mr. Bojack?
So what is the status of the conditions we put on? I was pretty motivated to get some sidewalks in there in that frontage road area, and I thought that we tied it to this project. But I thought that the sidewalks were coming in 2016. When will they have to put those sidewalks in?
You're talking about on the frontage road.
On the frontage road, yeah.
It was 5 years or when they redeveloped, whichever occurred first.
Okay.
So if you've noticed, sidewalks have gone in front of Opiant now.
Yep.
Because they developed, but it was 5 years from that date, and it's probably 3 years maybe left.
Okay. So the sidewalks are coming regardless of this?
Correct.
Okay, great.
At least in the area that's not impacted by this
project. Right.
And our next steps on this project will be to create official map documents, and that will allow anyone that wants to sell these parcels, the city's right first refusal to buy that parcel if they want to. It also notify any buyer that this parcel could be acquired by the city in the future time. And we're also going to collect traffic volumes on 55th Street Northwest after the extension project is completed by the county. And if there's any other development that goes in this area, because that could change Emily's traffic projections. That's a smooth linear line. It could raise it up quicker, and we could have to do this improvement sooner. So we'll continue to monitor traffic operations in the study area. And if safety issues occur, then we'll also have to relook at traffic and see if there's anything we can do to help mitigate those issues. Any other questions?
So as an example of this, of development with the Chateau Circle, does that qualify as development you'd want to keep on the radar?
Yeah, they were aware that project was happening. In fact, the Chateau Circle developers got information from SRF and their traffic studies, and that was taken into account.
All right. Other questions? Mr. Mayor?
The cost of taking those properties that was included in your total cost.
Yep.
The other one, you go back, it had something on the pedestrians for the traffic light versus the... Yeah, pedestrians have the right-of-way on a roundabout. Mm-hmm. People really know that? That's got to be worse than something on the curb. Really?
Ms. Means, we have a question.
I was thinking about that maintenance cost, and even though it's not been calculated in this particular project, is it the same? I mean, what do you have any idea what previous maintenance costs have been for single ones, intersections versus?
No, I don't.
Not even none?
Well, no,
you
don't
have any?
This would replace an existing signal, so it would not be an increase in maintenance cost. With the signal, because we're just moving the signal from one location to the up to another, but it wouldn't be a decrease as it would be with a roundabout.
Mr. Bilderback.
Emily, I'm curious about traffic studies. We hear a lot about them. When you look at making a 10, 15-year projection, is that based on if the property around is developed, not developed? Because in this area, we have a lot of undeveloped property at the moment. And so what happens if that develops? Is that taken into account?
So there's a lot of growth that's expected in this area, and we took that into consideration for the 2040. We looked at what the land use plan is. That's what the travel demand model that gives you the forecast. It goes into expected land use plans for 2040. So it takes into account all the residential developments, commercial development that's expected to occur in the area. It also takes into account the 55th Street extension and how that's going to impact travel patterns. So there is some growth that's coming in. And what Aaron's talking about at the end with the next step, it's just if a large development were to go in, that maybe is not expected, or with a large development going in, it means there's another traffic study that will go along with that to determine.
So east of this location, there's some vacant property on the south side of 55th Street, mm-hmm. just west of 18th Avenue. Right. And there's also some on the north side of the road. And so, again, the Rokoff land use, or Rokoff traffic model takes into account the development of that. Yeah. The densities may not be perfect, you know, in the model, but there is a representation that vacant land does get developed and it has a certain amount of trip generation.
Good, thank you.
So, Aaron, if you go back to the very first slide about the one that showed the different phases. So the good news, as Aaron mentioned, was the fact that the construction of the first two projects has really resulted in a shift of traffic away from this busy intersection to the point now that the phase two can possibly be delayed up to about eight additional years, if not more. So it was hard. It's always hard to predict that in the model. We weren't sure at the time the modeling was being done back in 2006 and 2009 that Menards was going to move. But that move, coupled with the new interchange at 65th Street and the phase one improvements, have really provided some operational benefits in this corridor that weren't anticipated to be here at this particular point in time.
Mr. Campion.
Yeah, so I had a couple questions. One would be phase three with came up this weekend on social media for the double diamond change. There you go. So if this moves out this phase 10 years, is there a projection for how far out that change would move?
Set that one at 2035 right now, but we'd have to reevaluate. Probably when we do this study, when right. This actually gets built, we'll look at when that needs to happen.
Okay, so I had a couple follow-ons. I hope I'm allowed here. The other one is the elimination of a property north through taking the safe Fazoli's or whatever it is. Is then that development's traffic subtracted from the north movement of this change?
It would be accounted for just more general. So we don't know exactly what would be replaced there, so our model projections aren't that detailed.
Sure.
But we would be accounting for a certain amount of retail land in that area.
Okay.
And we did see growth in that area, but that's more probably from
I did. The only reason I bring it up is I know, you know, restaurants and fast food restaurants in particular tend to be one of those cases that generate a lot, and I know that the north movement there, having lived out there for a while now, is probably the most complicated one for most drivers to manage. I'm kind of trying to get to the point of, so today you guys have made a decision about what the preferred model is. What happens 10 years from now when we actually look to break ground on this project? You know, is there another evaluation of what the preferred solution is at the time we're actually tilling ground out here and getting ready to pour concrete?
Yes, I mean, right now what we'd like to do, again, to address some of the property owners' concerns about are they impacted or not, is to prepare the official map and have you and the county adopt it. And then in doing so, then as there's hardship cases, the city would be, or the county would be in a position to acquire that right-of-way. And it's all part of a process that we have to follow under the law. We have to go through this kind of analysis. We have to make a determination of a preferred alternative. We have to identify that, and then we map it, and then we'd be able to acquire the property. To get to your question, though, is we're going to continue to monitor the corridor, not only this intersection, but all the way across the whole intersection. And if there are changes, we can come back and change our mind. I mean, there's nothing that requires a future council or a future county board, because this might be a county road in the future. By the time we actually get to the point of having to construct the project, this could be CASA 22.
Sure.
For them to reevaluate and determine that another solution is more preferred at that time based on changes in conditions and traffic patterns and things like that.
We do start heading down a path, though, which is...
We do.
Once you have the official map, you know, some of the properties may say they want to sell their property or move on or change their property, in which case you have 6 months to acquire it. It's kind of official map sets up kind of a fisher cut bait scenario.
Okay.
But at least it's out there on record, so it's a very, you know, they have rights in that process. It's a, you know, the way you would acquire other property, you'd have to do an appraisal, and they have their rights to get their own appraisal and negotiate and all that. So it's a structured process, but it puts everybody on record that this project is likely going to happen. And in that 10-year window, you probably would be acquiring several of these properties.
Mr. Wojcik.
As best I can tell, if we do the official map for the signalized intersection, we're effectively, we still have the right of way to do the roundabout if that becomes a preferred option in the future.
Yes. That's why I was slowly meandering to that point, I promise, get
to the
just
point.
To make sure that we have both situations covered so that we're not trying to buy a 2X property at the end.
The impact on everyone is you're impacting the virtually the same parcels and every single one. You're just impacting one who's more significant than the other and some of the others, but they're all touched in some way. For example, the roundabout, maybe if you can go to that one, Aaron. The townhouses and others, you can see that. Aaron, you can point out that.
Yeah,
right.
We're
proposing an alley there, okay, to provide access to them. It meets the legal definition of access, but is it something that, when we really get into the final decision-making on that those property owners are going to be satisfied with due to their proximity, the setback? You know, it's just an alley. It's not a 60-foot wide right-of-way that they're set back. And so
they're creating a really interesting strip of sidewalk or path there that's kind of running the gauntlet.
Yeah,
between
that's a really interesting situation that could develop there, and we're just, we don't need to take it. It meets the definition of reasonable and convenient access, but you or the county board in the future may decide that's not reasonable and that those properties would be acquired under this scenario also.
And all of those properties are being notified as well.
Yeah, they all of those owners were at the information.
Great, thanks.
All right, anything else? Any other questions?
So would you like me to bring an RCA to the council meeting for formal adoption of proceeding with the official map, or just a nod of approval today? What would your preference be?
Do we need to initiate the official map?
Yes.
Then we should.
Then we should bring it forward.
Okay, I'll bring an RC to the council then.
All right, thank you. Thank you for the presentation. All right. Mr. Penn, thank you.
Thank you.
Well,
I'm glad you got the word. I sincerely apologize. I actually left early knowing that there was construction on Highway 14.
Thank you.
And should have arrived here early, allowing for the construction, but I learned a lesson. The delay was far longer than I anticipated, and so instead of coming here early, I arrived here late. So thank you for coming here. They have made time for me. I know we all complain about the need for infrastructure and road construction in our state, and when it happens, we complain.
Yes.
So that's my complaint. I want to start by, again, thanking you for your patience, and secondly, thank you for juggling your agenda, and thirdly, thank you for the ongoing support that we received from the City of Rochester, other cities across the region, and all of the counties within the region for the work that we at Southern Minnesota Foundation undertake in this 20-county South Central Minnesota region. The packet you have, you don't necessarily need to page through it now, but there is an annual report from last year. We're developing our new annual report, and it will be published soon. There's also a fact sheet that's relatively current on some of the more recent work that we've done in Olmsted County, and you'll see that on the side of your folder as well. In the recently completed fiscal year, just a week ago, logged about $5.3 million worth of investments in the 20-county region that we serve. We do that in two primary program areas. One is early childhood, because we believe that to be a long-term workforce for our region. And the other is entrepreneurship, which is helping, along with other economic development entities and local lenders, helping to get new businesses started and growing here in our region. In the early childhood realm, we have consistently for many, many years invested in AmeriCorps personnel who work in early childhood sites. A few of those have been in Olmsted County all through these years. Each of those slots is valued at $30,000 to $40,000 of salary benefit that we bring to these early childhood sites. and these become essentially teacher's aid, and they work primarily on social and emotional readiness to get kids ready for kindergarten. We have several book distribution programs, and when you add those all up, I think just in the last fiscal year, roughly $30,000 worth of books were donated to organizations here in your city, public school, public library, the Kiwanis clubs, et cetera. And we also allocated a grant to create a reading oasis in partnership with one of your local Kiwanis clubs. And we also provided 3 Young Explorer computers to one of your daycare sites here in the city. In terms of our economic development investments, we have been working extensively with the smaller towns around Rochester to help them do some strategic planning and thinking around what's going to happen with all the growth of DMC. But we are also, and we provided some grants and some planning programs in that regard, but we're also embedding some of our staff in the Ready Journey Growth process, because we want to make sure that we're fully connected with some of the ideas and initiatives that grow out of that as well. And not incidentally, Lisa Clark is on our board of directors, so that keeps us very closely informed of all that's happening with DMC here in Rochester. I also wanted to mention that we did provide a grant to Rochester Area Economic Development for an entrepreneurship program, and about a year and a half ago, we provided a grant for the Chamber that has led to some minority business outreach over the last several weeks, and there will actually be another diversity meetup tomorrow that our grant has helped to orchestrate. We're going to have some of our staff over here staffing that event tomorrow. The last thing that I want to mention is that we do have a loan program. We do 25 to 30 early stage or startup loans every year, and we did 2 loans in the county this past year. One to a local foods operator up by Orinoco, and another to a startup preschool here in Rochester. But we created an equity fund as well, so that gives us, in addition to our lending, another way to help startups. And 3 of those are Rochester-based: Ambient, Sonics, and Thaddeus Therapeutics. And I think all 3 of those were done in partnership with Mayo Medical Ventures and Rochester Area Economic Development. So when you add it up, it's $250,000 to $300,000 worth of investments in the last year that we brought to Olmsted County, but a good share of that to Rochester proper. We do raise about 10% of our annual budget from donations, such as those that we get from cities and counties, but also banks and corporations and individuals. But that means we're bringing in about $10 for every dollar we raise locally. And we think that those are good investments, and we believe that our model is one of good partnership and collaboration with others that are working on these key issues. So again, thank you for your ongoing support through the years, and thanks for considering us again in this year's budget. Okay.
I have a couple of questions to start off. The range of loans, grants, investments are impressive. Is there any sort of quantification of the return on those investments?
Yeah.
That's one question.
Yeah. I can give you that in each of these individual programs if you like. If you want to, I don't have it with me today, but we do have, on every grant we issue, we have measurable outcomes that we're seeking through those grants, and then we record that data as those grants are implemented and the results are achieved. The same is true in the reading programs that we identify through our book distribution. There's an expectation there as to how those books will be used and how many students will be assisted and what outcomes will be achieved. The same would be true of any of the grants that we issue on the economic development side. The same would be true of the Kiwanis Reading Partnership, that we really expect a certain mentoring reading program to go on in partnership with both Head Start in their neighborhood or whatever, and we try to measure the outcomes there as well. So all of that is part of our process, and as long as you gave me an opening. One item that I forgot to mention is this coming fall, actually, first weekend of December, we'll be doing the second annual Feast Festival, which is all about local foods. We did that here in Rochester late last November. It drew 1,200 visitors. It was here at the Mayo Civic Center. 1,200 visitors. We had 120 local food producers or processors exhibit, and we had about 50 buyers that came to check it out, and a lot of contracts resulted from that, and we've got the documentation on how many purchasing contracts resulted from that meetup. And it was successful enough that we plan to do it again, and because we're partnering with Mayo on this initiative, as well as the Minnesota Department of Agriculture, we believe it's going to become a bigger and bigger event every year here at the Rochester Civic Center.
And I don't know that it, personally it's not important that I see some of those numbers. What is important is that when I hear you say that it's something you look at in your process, that return on investment, that we're making smart investments.
And all the grants for the book distribution joint programs, we have measurable outcomes that we're seeking with those, and we document all that. And then we do get some grants from other foundations to support the work here in the region. And so we've got metrics that we have to satisfy for them in exchange for the grants that they provide. So we have a self-interest in doing that because we want results. But we have a lot of money that's granted to us by other organizations, and we have to measure results for them as well. And all of that is available if you see it.
The other question I had is oftentimes we're investing in startup companies, and one of the things that concerns us sometimes is that they establish themselves and then they leave the area. Do you track that at all?
Yes, we do, and in terms of the businesses we invest in, very few leave, and of those that fail, I think in our SBA lending program, which is our larger program, but it's smaller businesses, we only have about a 10% default rate in that program, and they tend to be higher risk ventures, so we're very, very pleased with our success ratio there. But one of the reasons we created the equity fund is that businesses, startups, don't stay here because most of the money isn't coming from here. And so we wanted to be an entity in Southern Minnesota that could offer some equity money as a way of making it more likely that if the money's here, the businesses will grow here. And the three that I cited, we did in partnership with Mayo Network Ventures, and I believe also in partnership with the Rochester Area Economic Development. And with three of us at the table, that means a significant investment has been made by three equity funds here in the region, and more likely that these three businesses will sprout here and grow here.
We're here for part of the fundraising.
Well, I knew that there was some level of funding.
I think the council has seen, the council, I think, has seen some of those you mentioned. We took the Sonex and Ambient, and I don't remember which other one, you know.
That is therapeutics.
It's been a really good partnership.
Yeah.
Their money has been. A lot of these businesses, they have to layer their funds because they can't, not everybody can give them the amount they need. And you get, four partners or more in some cases. Yeah. It really makes a difference. So it really helps a lot.
And obviously we're seeking to do equity investments in other communities across the region, and we're seeking partners in other communities just as we have some very good partners here.
Okay. Other questions from council?
All right.
Well, this is definitely one of the bright spots, and again, we appreciate the work that goes into, startup firms and investing in entities that are start here and grow here, and we keep that economic growth, keep those jobs, and that's important to us as well. Mr. Mayor, you had a comment.
Yeah, Tim, are there organizations that maybe you'd like to fund, but they maybe just don't have their act together, or they need help presenting it better or whatever?
Once in a while. I mean, we'll get a grant request from an organization that we don't believe has the capacity to actually deliver on the grant request. And what we try to do in those cases is provide them some very useful, helpful guidance as to what they need to do to strengthen their programming so that they can be more successful.
Mr. Campion.
So I'm maybe not unique amongst the council members, but at a startup currently, I will say one of the fundamental kind of challenges we see in the local environment is finding that equity that's out there, that capital that you can leverage to kind of, you have these ideas, you're growing a business, and Silicon Valley looks really tempting when you can go out there and piece together a deal with two or three partners versus staying put. So I think that continues to be a challenge our local community has to look at. If you're going to try and attract and these young entrepreneurs to do new businesses in our community, I think setting up that transition, how we're going to continue to kind of foster transition to a mature local business that will continue to give back to the community through taxes and through the kind of innumerable. So I think looking at this, impressed and looking forward to kind of continuing the relationship and hoping success in doing that locally.
Mr. Bilderbach. Tim, I appreciate what you've done and what you brought us. My question is, what do you foresee in the future? I mean, there's a lot of growth going to happen in Rochester, yeah. Homestead County, yeah. The 2020 area. What's your projections of what's going to happen? Where's the needs?
Workforce is huge, and we're not big enough to take on a third issue category, but one of our grants to these communities around Rochester does deal with workforce. And one of the task forces that we're participating in here with Journey to Growth is workforce related. A lot of that is going to have to be handled through the two-year institutions in our area, and developing more programming that's meeting the training needs that exist among our employers today, but also doing it maybe on shorter time frames. And so I see the two-year institutions really trying to respond more readily to that, and I think the work being done by Journey to Growth, and I believe the work being done by the grant we issued to this multi-community collaborative will give some added guidance to these institutions as to what those workforce needs are. But that's really, really huge. The biomedical stuff, bioag, bioenergy, biomedical is going to continue to be a huge growth factor here. You can see the first three equity funds we invested in with our small equity program were in the biomedical arena. And I see that as continuing to be great benefit. Not all of them are going to locate right here in Rochester. They may locate in towns around Rochester, but it's all about the regional economy. And that's the third thing I would stress, is that we see we're a 20-county region foundation, and we really have three or four economic regions within our 20-county area. And then those regions have some interconnectedness and interdependency. So we really try to help communities think of themselves as not isolated, where they have to be everything unto themselves, but that they're part of a bigger economy, a bigger job, a catchment area, et cetera, so that they don't do all of their economic planning in a very narrow way, but think of themselves as part of a bigger region. It's why we signed on to be committee members on some of Gary Smith's Ready to Grow or Journey to Grow initiatives, because we want to be in that conversation. The last thing is the diversity issue. And I think through our early childhood work, a lot of those expenditures are benefiting facilities that have more and more diverse student populations, preschool populations. So we think that's really important to help these kids get ready for kindergarten. But on the entrepreneur side, we're trying to do more and more work through organizations that can help us get some of our lending capacity to benefit some of these new immigrant entrepreneurs and minority entrepreneurs. And we actually have one grant from DEED, the state's Department of Economic Development, that is specific to benefiting our work in reaching out to some of the organizations in the region that have good networks with the minority populations in our region to help on the entrepreneurial side. So that would be the last thing that I see changing in our region that we need to respond to. And it's something that we're really top of mind about at the moment, because we're in the starting our fourth year of a five-year plan. So we're at the front end of looking at our next multi-year plan, and we're trying to figure out where do we need to make some adaptation here. And some of that, I think, is going to be on this increasing diversity issue, both in our early childhood programming and in our entrepreneur programming.
Back when we approved our most recent sales tax, there's $5 million in there for economic development. And at the time that was being pitched, and, you know, we had some things cut out, but that one did remain. There was some talk with Reddy and the Chamber that they were going to create a matching $5 million private fund. And as best I can tell, I've never seen a penny of that money go anywhere. And I'm curious, who would we bring in to explain what the status is on that process?
Well, I don't remember that, but Reddy does have some of its own funds. The funds going for some of the businesses, you know, by and large, lately have been coming from the city's fund. I guess we could ask Gary.
Yeah.
Was that question Gary Smith or Rob Miller? Yeah.
No, it would be Gary Smith.
Okay.
They have some of their own funds. Right now, the primary funding they've been using is the $5 million.
All right. right. Anyone else?
Okay. Again, thank you very much. Thank you very much for our work. We appreciate the partnership.
All right. Was there any other business to come before the group this afternoon? Mr. Wojcik?
I have two items. I've been a little bit frustrated with this boards and commissions discussion that's gone on, and even more irritated, reading how it was covered in the Post Bulletin today. And, you know, we had some allegations of some inappropriate behavior at the Q Commission, which turned out to be totally unwarranted and completely ridiculous that it even came forward the way that it did. At the same time, I keep hearing these, well, this is going on. What I want to say is, you know, I want some people to step up and tell us what the issues are, because I'm hearing there are things going on and then nobody's telling us what they are. And the bottom line is if we're going to be going after these boards, and Mr. Quinvolt, you made some comments that we've had issues in the past with CUDE, I want to get these issues on the table. I want to find out what the complaints are. I've received a number of notes from people serving on different boards and commissions, and they're not happy about the way this was portrayed in the paper, and I don't blame them. I think they're doing a fantastic job, and if somebody has a problem with the way that they're handling themselves, well, then let's get those issues out there on the table. But right now, I sit down and I read the newspaper, and it tells me, well, there are some things going on that we're concerned about. Well, what are those things? We had some issues with CUDE in the past. Well, what are those things? As far as I can tell, we had one issue brought up with CUDE. Turned out to be nothing at all. And so for those, you know, if we're going to be looking at the boards and commissions, which I support taking a look at their mission, but I want those of us that are speaking out and saying that there are issues, write them down, put them in a note, get them on the table. I don't like this kind of backhanded swats that are going on. And the people who are serving on our volunteer boards and commissions don't like it either. And I wanted to bring that up right here so it's on the record and everyone knows I'm pretty passionate about this particular issue, and that's all I have to say on that one. I'm happy to hear any comments.
Well, and I think that's why I personally advocated, let's back up, take a look at the mission statement. That's always a good thing to do. And then also on a more proactive stance, if there are some gaps, or there's some things we could do on a number of our commissions to help better prepare them via education or whatever else. So I wasn't assuming that there were necessarily any issues. I was taking a more proactive approach. Let's just do a checkpoint and perhaps see if we could do some things going forward. So that was my position in supporting taking a look at things anyway. In fact, I think I said in the newspaper article that, and I emphasized the word perhaps, there were some concerns, and I didn't want to dwell on that. I would rather take the more proactive stance.
Well, and you know, a lot of the concerns I've heard are more along the lines that we had a... you know, for a long time, we had a long, proud tradition of planning and zoning commission, which was typically 8 or 9 developers on there, and everything flew through pretty easily, and now there's actually some critical thinking going on some of these issues, and I think that I do appreciate the work they're doing and their input, and, you know, I want them to fulfill their role correctly as well, but a lot of these things, if there's a public hearing on it, it's because there is some discretion there, typically things like incentive or restricted development. So I want to make sure that our boards feel empowered to take on the issues as they see fit.
Mr. Campion.
I'd like to make sure that we delineate between two aspects of this conversation, which have been muddied, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. There's the need for the boards to be cordial, or to at least be not attempting to intimidate or to be sarcastic with people. I've witnessed this from all walks of life on the Planning and Zoning Commission when I served. And it's one of those things that I can see issuing just a statement that says, you know, we're looking to encourage people to come forward, both the neighborhoods, the developers. Everyone should feel welcome at a meeting. People shouldn't be intimidated out of the door. I'm not even suggesting that's happened. What I've heard so far, I find myself in agreement. Unsubstantiated, anecdotal evidence of problems at the boards. Frankly, if we start chasing down every unsubstantiated, anecdotal piece of evidence we get about any board or group or office within our city, we won't have much to do besides review different groups.
So I can understand the desire to make sure everyone's being treated equitably and fairly at those meetings. I think that's important. If we're going down a different path, which is we're not happy with the results that are being produced, that's an entirely different discussion in my mind. That gets into, are you happy with the results that are being produced? And I would like to make darn sure that we're talking about the correct discussion that's taking place. If it's about how the business is being handled in terms of approachability, let's have that conversation. If we're talking about the results that are being produced, I'd like to make sure we're delineating the two that are being discussed so that I'm weighing in appropriately, because if it's about quorum or demeanor during the meetings, let's bring up solid information about what's happening and we can reiterate our position about what we expect from them in terms of interactions with the public. If it's about the results, I'd like to understand what people's expectations are of the commission. If it's setting the mission and making sure that's clear, fine. I'd like to have that conversation. But there are two very different conversations to me. You can't just be unhappy and make that I wasn't treated fairly. Okay. That those are different conversations in my mind.
Yep.
Mr. Quenville.
Well, during that council meeting, and the note I sent you before that, I covered quite a bit of different ground with boards and commissions. One of the things I indicated verbally that night was that I heard second, third, or fourth hand over time a number of things about people that may have not been treated with courtesy at a boards and commissions. And that led me into thinking, well, you as a council put a lot of emphasis on us as permanent staff that we treat the citizens or applicants with courtesy, and so, but we don't really pass that message on necessarily to our other appointed people. And that just indicated the last thing I'd heard was that this, how this guy from Associated Bank was treated. I didn't say that it was true, but I'd pass it on. I'd heard it. I'm not going to indicate where I heard it or how I heard it, but I've heard those things, and so I'd pass it on to you. But there was many messages in that, talking about the number of commissions and whether or not they're all needed, whether or not some of them can be assembled together for the same message, whether or not what kind of staffing you provide for them. And so there were all different kinds of things that I mentioned about boards and commissions, and I realized that there's been feedback, at least upon treatment of people, but perhaps that also serves some purpose. The message at least got out to the boards and commissions. They may not feel good about it, but perhaps they'll keep it in mind when somebody comes before them, that they'll make sure that they treat these people with the courtesy that you expect the permanent staff to do.
I would expect that correction, though, to take place directly and not through the media. I think that's a fair criticism about how this played out. Not that it was the intent that it's done that way, but when I work with my employer, if he has a problem with how I'm behaving, I appreciate when he approaches me directly and gives me feedback about my behavior. I think it's safe to assume we should do the same for our commissions, who are doing, frankly, a very high expectation job with very little compensation of any variety.
And as I indicated, I have very little opportunity to speak to you in a group. And I can only do that in public.
Yeah.
And so that's the way some of this stuff plays out. And so that's the only opportunity that I have, basically, at the council dinner meeting, to talk to all of you at one time. And I see there's some purpose in talking to you all at one time. And so I didn't mean any disrespect, and I think I indicated that the input of the citizen groups are valued. I just don't think they're not the people's elected representative, and therefore I wouldn't give them decision-making power. And that was just basically a basic organizational philosophy that I passed on. And I feel strongly about that. And obviously there's a fine line in that, and I do believe that from the city council standpoint, you'd probably be happy if everything was worked out before it got to you, so that you don't have to do it yourselves, which I understand.
We just get bored.
But I think that's still a strong organizational principle, that these entities are not the people's elected representatives, and they should not be, in my mind, negotiating the development details. And again, there's a fine line that would be some expectations that they carried on that the governing body has to therefore agree with that details that they negotiated. That's just a simple statement.
Yeah, I think, you know, unfortunately, there's some problems in the way the system's set up. One is the fact that we can't have a conversation privately. And so this conversation that we're having today will be reported on by the Post Bulletin. We can have a half-hour conversation, and they're not going to write a full paper on this conversation, so they take highlights. We as council members need to be understanding of that and be a little more respectful of that as well. We know that. We also know that this, our commissions, and I believe when we talked about this at the dinner meeting, we talked about the fact that we should assist them any way we can and help them where we can. Talking about classes, we talked about the fact that reviewing their missions to try to help them, because our city has changed. And maybe the expectations and the thoughts as these people rode through have changed. And so reviewing those is not a bad idea. I think it's important. We've got to understand that it's intimidating. It's tough for anybody to get up and speak, not only in front of the council, but any of these commissions. They're very difficult, and people are very passionate, and we have to understand that too. How they take the way they're treated is going to be an individual process. Again, if they feel they didn't get what they want and they thought they were treated rudely, that's what they're going to say. I think what we were saying at the meeting, because I support neighborhood advocacy groups as much as anybody, is the fact that I'm trying to help our people who are volunteers do the best job and give them the most opportunity to do the job successfully, as we're hoping they're going to be able to do, and make our lives a little easier when it gets to the council, when we have to make those decisions, is all set up by the offer that night of trying to get people education and get them an opportunity to learn. That's all I saw it as. We need to make sure that we give the boards as much as we can help them and support them along the way. I know sometimes we've gotten on boards and we've kind of been thrown out there and you figure it out yourself. Well, that's not the way we should be doing it. We should be making sure that they have education. We should take the time to review to make sure that what we're getting on these committees is kind of the things that we want. And I agree with you, Nick. We don't want them to, if they don't agree with us, and that's wrong. That's not what we're asking. Right. But we're asking for a fair bit. And we got to understand that neighbors and business people who are new to this area, they're going to go off of things that they've heard. So giving our committees the opportunity to get educated and to help them by reviewing this, what their mission is, to make sure we're still in complete agreement, and to help us understand that. I mean, I don't think that we can all say we understand the missions of every committee out there. We need to take that time and give them that opportunity so that we can have our citizens, the developing community who are coming into Rochester. We want them to invest in Rochester so they all know what the playing field is and they feel that they haven't. They're fairly hurt. I think that's all we're asking. And I have no problem with reviewing mission statements. I have no problem trying to offer classes or education to help our citizens who are volunteering to be on these committees get that information so they can do the best job they can. That only makes it better for all of us. Ms. Means.
Well, clearly I think what you proposed for in terms of education and collaboration and doing whatever we can do to mentor, and then there should be some mentoring for us as well, I think. I think missions are good because then it gives us something to target how we're progressing. And I've talked about that over a period of time now, and we all need to have those measurements and goals. I have to tell you personally, when I attended the CUBE meeting, I didn't witness any outright disrespect. The dissatisfaction came because there was not a quorum, and the businessman flew in because, is it a requirement that they talk with CUDE? So maybe came in as a result of the invitation. But at any rate, he left and he was unhappy because he didn't get any information from the meeting. He felt it was a waste of time. So in terms of customer satisfaction, as well as valuing our volunteer commissions and boards, I think we need to continue to focus on that respect for the individual and understand why he was dissatisfied, what could have been done. I think what's disrespectful is we didn't have a quorum.
And I would agree. I'm personally not
I'm not interested in spending energy on chasing down anecdotal kinds of things. I'd rather focus on the more tangible aspects and things that we can do to make the process better. I think there's a lot going on in Rochester, and it's only going to increase. And clearly, we have some more complex projects. I mean, the number of restricted and incentive development projects, it seems like we see those more routinely now. And each one of those, or a special district, each one of those seem to be, a unique animal unto itself. So it is more complex. So anything we can do to more collaboratively work with our advisory bodies is clearly a benefit to everyone in our community.
And you know, we really need to look about how can we enhance the services that we provide. And perhaps some of that is through consolidation. I'm not sure, but I think it's important to look at what's in front of us to see how it can be improved.
Yeah, I would say about the same thing. I mean, one of the things when I came on board is you look at the number of boards that we serve on at behest of the council. I think that's another thing worth reviewing if we're going to put things on the docket is, is it better to have someone from the council at the planning and zoning meeting as a liaison? Is it better that, I know he hates that idea, but we just sit there and listen. But
yeah, I think we got a little trouble on that one.
We'll
go
see.
Ahead.
But regardless, I think I refer to it as the year of experimentation. Like, it's good to get down and try some new stuff and look at it. And I didn't mean to come off as though you meant everything that was interpreted. You can't be in control of everyone's interpretation of the paper. And I've been guilty myself of saying something in the paper you didn't intend to say, so that's the way it goes. But I think the end result is, I can support the idea that we take an objective look at the groups. And I think you hit the nail on the head. More's happening. More's happening in every aspect of Rochester. So I think there has to be some look at how do we better leverage people that show an interest in making Rochester better to make sure that we continue to be able to meet the expectations of the community. As the community grows, as more people demand more, as there's more to do, how do we take better advantage of people who are willing to volunteer their time and their effort and their interests in the community to make it better? We have to figure that out, and we have to address it, I think, as a council to show some direction.
And I'll take a little guidance from you and say there are two separate issues here, and I want to keep them very separate. All the stuff we're talking about doing about reviewing and improving the process, support 100%, no doubt about it, that's a good thing. Where I don't want to lose the focus is that unless we actually have some example of something being done improperly by one of these boards, I don't want to hear about it. I don't want to hear about it as an antidote. I don't want to read about it. There is no issue until we have something that's been verified for us. I've been to almost every CUED meeting in the last 7 years. I happen to not be at this one. I've never seen any issues out of that body whatsoever. So until there's something that's actually verified, I just don't want to hear about it, don't want to read about it. It's not an issue. It doesn't exist.
Mike, I agree with what you're saying. I understand it, but I also would understand if I was a businessman who flew here to meet with the committee and it didn't have a quorum, I'd be pretty upset.
I could
take that as being disrespectful. Whether that means we as a council have to try to figure out how do we make sure we get quorums, things of that interest, especially if a person is coming voluntarily to speak to a committee, mm-hmm. and the committee doesn't have enough people to make a quorum.
I would, and I throw out the same suggestions on CUED I threw out 5 years ago. Anytime we want, because that was an issue 5 years ago and it's an issue today. But I'd also point out that I asked for the attendance records of all the CUED members almost a full month ago now. Still haven't heard anything, haven't gotten it from staff. So, when we have issues with attendance, that goes to staff, not the not the committee. We need to know about that and make the corrections.
Well, and that would be the members of the committee maybe need to be changed if somebody is in
exactly. But we can't do that without staff giving us those records.
That's correct. But I'm just saying that maybe the business person in this case felt disrespected because, if he flew in from somewhere, he paid for the airline tickets, he's here, he's probably here in the hotel mm-hmm. for a night or two in his meals, and then he shows up to a group that is voluntary for him to show up to. And then they don't have to. And so, yep. I mean, we got to you got to put your look at the picture from their end of it too. Maybe that's what this all started from. I don't know.
Right.
All I'm saying is that we have to be understanding of their commitment, their time, and their money that they're making an effort to come here. And again, that's something we can work with our committees and volunteers. Mm-hmm. And like you say, if we can get the attendance records, then we can really take a look at it and see, does it change anything?
Yep.
So it sounds like we are gathering mission statements for all of our boards, commissions, so we'll have those to review. Just today I received some more input from League of Minnesota Cities. They've got, and I was focusing more on planning and zoning, that one has a particular spot in my heart. And they have identified a number of classes, both through the LMC or through the Land Institute, that are kind of a planning 101. And I think, Mr. Adkins' experience underscores when he went around and visited the boards and commissions just to provide a refresher on the ethics ordinance and Robert's rules. And I think that was enlightening to a few board members because, once again, once they're appointed, we can't necessarily assume that they've been in a formalized setting like ours and know the rules of operation, or more so even some of the land use 101 sort of information. We kind of throw you in and hope you like it. So I think that information is coming together. I'll be assembling some ideas and send it out via administration or council. And then I think we've also asked Mitzi to insert, once again, a line item in the plan, in the budget that'll probably come forward to allow for some education. There used to be, but we pulled it out for budget reasons, and it'd be good to entertain putting that back in. Mr. Mayor.
Regarding the attendance, there is a process where, and I don't know if all the chairs or the staff person at each one of the committees. It has happened. It's not often, but if there is someone that is habitually not being at meetings, I think it's two or three, then I get notified. We will call them and say, there's some issues here. And if there still isn't any change, then they do get a letter that removes them from the committee.
I think we quantify it too, Mr. Adkins. Is that not true?
I'm like struggling to catch up, but it's in the Home Rule Charter, actually.
Right, but like 80% is a sticks in my head?
Same here.
It does happen.
Yeah, while he's looking that up, I was attended a telephone conference, a call with National, and there were some people that were not participating in the telephone conference call, and the chair said, I want to know who they are. I want to call and find out if they're still interested. Mm-hmm. And that might be another way to handle it or consider.
And I think some of that falls to the chair, making yes. sure that are you looking at everyone, making sure everyone is having an opportunity to participate. And if they're awfully quiet, I tend to call people out just to make sure that we get all the thoughts on the table. So that's just being a good chair.
But it always works on me.
Yeah.
I was just going to ask our zoning administrator, is there an MNAPA meeting in the state of Minnesota every single year? Because one of the things I find interesting is just the opportunity to maybe send them as a delegation to a conference, send the members that are available to say, go attend the pieces of the conference that are interested in you. And maybe if you're new, they usually have a 101 zoning as a piece of that to say, make special, care to make it to this one. It's probably not that much more expensive than what it would take to fund a whole bunch of individual trips. So maybe there's a way we can do that.
Well, actually, the League of Minnesota Cities has quite a variety of course offerings in that.
That's what I was talking about.
Yes, exactly. And they should...
They're nominal costs, like $30 per person.
Yeah.
Are the planning and zoning board members of the League of Minnesota Cities, do they count? I assume not. I'm getting a shake of the head.
I'm sorry.
We are.
It's a city.
What's the question?
It's a kind of qualified.
Okay. They're qualified. All right. I wasn't sure.
We write them a big check. They'll let them in. Okay.
Squad deck.
Switch gears completely?
Not yet.
Okay.
To follow up on the mayor's point, by charter, every appointed member of every board and commission is required to attend at least 80% of the regularly scheduled meeting each calendar year such body meets unless excused from attendance by the chair. Each board and commission shall maintain attendance records which document absences of members from meetings and indicates whether those absences are excused or unexcused. Each chair shall report to the mayor the name of any board or commission member whose attendance record, excluding excused absences, fails to meet the 80% attendance requirement. Failure of any appointed board or commission member to meet that requirement shall constitute just cause to remove the individual from that appointed position. In the case of a non-charter board member, that would be everybody other than RPU, library, and park, the appointing authority may summarily remove the board member upon a determination that the member has failed to meet the attendance requirement. In the case of a charter board member, RPU, library, and park, the appointing authority, those boards, may institute proceedings to relieve the individual from the appointed position.
I would wager that most of our board and commission chairs have no idea if that was
Well, let's distribute that information to them through the appropriate staff person.
Mr. Wojcik, you had another topic.
Yeah, and this, I guess, would be topic both council member Means and I. We've been discussing future of the Elton Hills Drive area because we've all received some notes about concern for non-motorized access along that route, and also the senior center, but 125 Live. They're interested in, you know, making sure they have safe connections from their facility to the trail system as well. So we met and we're putting together a community group to take a look at what the options are for Elton Hills Drive. It turns out the vehicle count on Elton Hills Drive is only 12,000 vehicles per day. So there's actually a tremendous amount of flexibility in terms of things you can do with that. But what we'd like to do is we've reached out to the schools, some neighbors. We're trying to get some kids involved. Sally Gallagher has agreed to be part of the effort. We're trying to get somebody involved from all the different schools. And without, you know, screwing around with the open meeting law stuff, we have room for one other council member to be on that as well. What I request is, you know, if you're somebody, you know, Sandra and I, we like our bikes quite a bit, but somebody who's a little bit more skeptical, you know, and I don't know if Ed would have interest in it, but somebody who doesn't, you know, who's not comfortable with these things on the roadway, let's get somebody else on this committee. I think it might, part of it's in your ward, I think, but we want to get, you know, a third person to, you know, give their side. Public Works and Parks are both involved, and this is one of those cases where there is no way to ever just build a trail that connects all those schools to the trail system. There's just It's fully built out. The only way we'll ever connect these areas is going to be on that right-of-way on Elton Hills Drive. So, you know, looking for some creative solutions. And also some folks from the Bicycle Alliance of Minnesota have agreed to help out. So if you're someone's interested in that, let us know. But we're going to – are you interested in doing that?
Maybe. Can I just had a question. I'm just curious what direction you're going. Because right now I think the plan of record is a road diet for Elton Hills Drive. And that's I was approached by some of the neighbors here, and that's where I kind of started questioning –
yeah,
whether that's a good solution. So, are you looking to revisit that, or?
Well, I mean, there's two separate. The road diet is the 4-3, and it does make a lot of sense for that quarter. They're never popular until they're done, but it did work out very well on Second Street. The vehicle counts are such that that's an option, but I wanted to kind of go back. Everything's on the table. What do we do? How do you address speeding? Because there's a lot of speeding issues on Elton Hills Drive. How do you address some? Mobility and there's, you know, and is there a way that you can make some on-street features that, you know, are safe enough that an 8-year-old and an 80-year-old would be willing to do that? And there are some options out there possibly. One of the unique things there too is that all of these institutional facilities that we're talking about, there's four schools if you count Kellogg on the other side of Broadway, and the senior center, rec center, and access to the
trail.
Thank you. 125 Live. They're all on the north side of the road, which is maybe an opportunity to do something like a, you know, cycle track, or we call protected bike lanes on that side of the road. There's also parking everywhere, and not a whole lot of parking gets used in most circumstances there. The only real heavy, intensive left turn intersection is probably that Broadway intersection. So there's anything's on the table, I think, at this point. I just want to get people through there safely.
Yeah,
so.
I'd be interested in that.
Okay, I'll put you on our notes then.
As a person who lives in the neighborhood, you know, I agree 100% about the traffic counts,
yeah,
numbers, But I think the biggest concerns that need to be looked at are the vertical curves in the road and yeah. the actual horizontal curves in the road. I mean, there's a lot of topography change yeah. in Elton Hills Drive.
Yeah.
And then the curves, that's where the issues need to be looked at in terms of, from my perspective, I'm a bike rider. I will not go on Elton Hills Drive very often. I mean, I'll go and take the trail down the parkway, cross the bridge, you know, and follow the parkway down and then cut across and come up past Sandra's house and whatever. But Elton Hills Drive, I mean, I'd like to be able to, so there may be some opportunities there, but I think the things to keep in mind there are just the horizontal and vertical curves in the road. Mm-hmm. It's scary.
Well, and that's one of the issues when you have the lanes right next to each other, is you get the fear of the side swipe.
And there are some areas, like you said, where parking is an issue there. I think that needs to be looked at, too. So
I volunteer, but I'm not as much of a skeptic.
No, you drink the Kool-Aid.
I drink some Kool-Aid. I don't know if it's not a Kool-Aid.
So, anyways, I wanted you to be aware of that effort, and you know, staff's aware of it as well. And
I think that goes to a broader topic that I've heard from at least a couple of council members. Is this goes back to our earlier comment? A lot of change in the last few years, and even if you look at our broad, complete streets policy, is there ever an opportunity to revisit that and make sure we're still on track? Are some of the things we wanted to accomplish still viable, and you know, still viable goals? So I think, as Mr. Wojcik says, you know, some of these things we need to be willing to revisit and adjust plans sometimes.
When I spoke with Mr. Wojcik, we met not too long ago, I was just relieved to hear that, you know, maybe there are some other possibilities to have better connectivity. And over the years, I've had lots of complaints about Elton Hills, but just recently had Corporal Gearhart did some studies out there, traffic studies, and didn't come up with, you know, anything that was real outrageous. And that has been the same indicators in the past. So I'm not sure about the speeding, but what I am concerned about is the connectivity. And because of all the schools on one side of Elton Hills, and can they ride their bikes safely if we have a trail system? And I talked with Superintendent Munoz today, and he is very supportive of exploring some options. Also, I talked with the traffic engineer, and this was on just a recent inquiry that came up about Elton Hills. And so I was at a meeting, and I don't know what to do. I don't know what else we can do. So I'm glad to have some other people with some other thoughts and to connect with Public Works, and explained in the note that this, of course, would have to be approved by Public Works and our city mm-hmm. engineer, and ultimately the city and the budget. So anyway, it wasn't that we were going to make some changes, but we are ready to look at a way to make sure that not only students but adults as well can utilize that road efficiently and safely.
I think one other aspect that kind of overshadows all of this is we'll have to be careful that we prioritize some of these things. I mean, we sit around the table here and talk about it, and I can see some of our staff going, oh no, another study, another, and it's going to take me how many hours to do this or evaluate those options. And so I am sensitive to that. I want you to be aware of that I'm not suggesting that we just dump all this on staff and they add that to the other workload. So I just want to be careful that as we go forward and we suggest these things, that we, you know, that there is consensus on the council and that we feel that there's value and we prioritize. Mr. Quenville?
Well, just a matter of organizational principle. Again, from my viewpoint, the council should authorize such a study before it's ever started. You know,
if there was funding involved.
Well, no, but just a matter of, I mean, I have a little bit of difficulty with individual council members starting up projects without the rest of the council knowing.
Well, and that's why I suggested there needs to be at least consensus.
Is there? I think, I mean, this is one of those things that comes up again and again. I mean, if we can hold everyone to the same standard, I'm okay with it. But I also then, every time we hear of some, you know, thing being explored, are we going to expect the council member to bring it here first? If that's what we want to set up, I'm okay with saying that, but then if something shows up that hasn't been discussed in front of us, I expect to ask a lot of questions about how it was investigated without council approval.
Anything that requires any significant staff time.
I think that's the question.
Okay, so staff is choosing to participate on
time or dollars.
So when you just come and ask us a simple question, there's no need for council authorization.
Right, sure.
If you start asking us to draft complex ordinances or resolutions,
and participate,
we'd like to know that you're speaking on behalf of the entire council.
And participation in meetings and such like that is the same deal, correct?
Okay.
But what's the purpose of speaking about this now? Is to inform the council and see if we could get some consensus.
And you know, staff is welcome to show up for the meetings or not show up for the meetings. But my understanding is they'd rather show up for the meetings.
You would want them to show up to the meeting, I assume, no?
Well, you know, and frankly, it's a MnDOT State Aid street, so I'm more interested in making sure MnDOT shows up.
I don't have any problems with what the study. I just, again, mentioned that if you're going to involve a lot of staff, then it probably should be the council.
Yeah, we need to make sure we're all on the same page. All right, anything else on that or any other topic this afternoon?
Mr. Atkins has a really nice tie on.
So does Council Member Builder.
Oh, you do.
Aww.
Who got it? Oh.
Right. So moved.
Can you follow the problems in the north?